海紧缺人才培训工程教学系列丛书，英语高级口语资格证书考试，高级听力教程第二版，周国强、杨永平主编，由上海外语音像出版社录制出版，第八盒。
An advanced course of English listening, second edition. Part C, note-taking and gap-filling.
Britain's system of education is not easy to summarize. This is because there are relatively few laws governing how children are educated. The day-to-day running of schools is mainly organized by local education authorities, boards of governors, and the individual head teachers. Britain is divided into a number of local government areas. Local government is responsible for providing a number of services, such as hospitals,the maintenance of roads, the police force, and education. The local education authority is responsible for providing schools and pays for them with money from central government and with money raised from local taxes. Every state school has a board of governors. This board is made up of representatives of the local education authority, teachers, and parents.They decide on the policies of their school and have some control over the selection of teacher and other staff. Within the school, the head teacher, sometimes called the headmaster or headmistress, is in charge of the teaching and administration and often leads school assemblies and other meetings of the school. There are certain laws which all local education authorities and schools have to obey.All children should attend full-time education between the ages of 5 and 16, and this education should be free, unless parents choose to send the children to a private school. All schools should provide religious instruction, though parents have the right to refuse to allow their children to attend. All schools should provide education in certain basic subjects, mathematics,English and science, as well as history, geography, technology, music, art, physical education, and, at secondary schools, a foreign language. Everything not covered by these laws is decided by the local education authority and the head teacher. There are many different types of school in England and Wales. However, schools fit into three main systems.The comprehensive system. The majority of children, about 93%, go to state schools, schools which are run by the state, through the local education authority, and which do not charge school fees. Of these children, more than 90% go to schools in the comprehensive system. Introduced in the 1960s, Fareham Community College,The school in this program is a comprehensive school. Children go to a primary school at the age of 5. Depending on the policy of the local education authority, they may go directly to the upper school, usually called the comprehensive school, at the age of 11 when they begin a secondary education. Alternatively, they may spend some time at a middle school before going to the upper school.The comprehensive system is non-selective. This means that all children go from one school to another without taking any exams and without being selected according to their abilities. The selective system. A small number of local education authorities still provide a type of selective education, a system which was originally introduced in 1944. Under the selective system,All children go to a primary school until the age of 11. They then take the 11-plus examination. Those who pass continue to a grammar school, where they receive a more academic education. Those who fail go to a secondary modern school, where they receive an education which is vocational rather than academic. It is intended to train them for a job when they leave at the age of 16. The private system. Only 7% of the children go to private schools. There are three levels of private school. Pre-preparatory schools, preparatory schools, and public schools. In order to gain entrance to public schools, children leaving preparatory school have to pass an examination known as Common Entrance. Many preparatory and most public schools are boarding schools. The children live at the school during the school terms. Even within one geographical area or one of these three systems, there can be a wide variety of schools. For instance, all boys schools, all girls schools, mixed schools, and voluntary schools. Voluntary schools often have a religious background, such as Roman Catholic or Church of England schools. These are usually paid for from public money, but founded by a voluntary organization.
Part D. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. Over the last 12 months, sales fluctuated considerably, reaching a peak of around 50,000 units at the end of 1999.
2. It's true that not all commercials are good, but a lot of them are very interesting and very amusing, and some of them are even more interesting than the programs.
3. All the time they're making new weapons, and eventually there are going to be so many weapons around that someone's going to start using them. It's inevitable.
4. The forest fire has been continuing for 2 days in southern France, and firemen from 6 different towns have been fighting all day to prevent the fire from spreading further.
5. What I like about police is the way they're so helpful, the way they can always find time to help you when you need directions, if you're lost or something.
2. Passage Translation.
1. The second thing we have to discuss today is pricing. When you go into the French market, you need to consider how you're going to price your product, and there are two main issues that need to be looked at. 1. Is what your competitors are pricing their product at, because you cannot price your market 3 or 4 times the price of your competitors. The second issue is that all of these product modifications, as you said, cost money, and you need to factor in the extra costs. So typically, an American product selling in the French market might be priced at about 125% of U.S. price or more.
2. From my experience of working in the UK and in Germany, I'd like to make some comparisons based on the differences I've noticed. Firstly, the level of language skills is different. I was very much impressed at the way in which most executives in the German company could not just speak English very well, but read it and write it and communicate effectively, compared with the very poor language abilities displayed by my English colleagues. Secondly, there are also significant differences in the approach of doing business. Germany is much more formal in the way that people conduct business. For example, there is very little use of first names, but more handshakes. It's a custom that's almost withered away in Britain, but in Germany, it's quite correct to greet people in the morning with a handshake. Sample Test 3. Part A. Spot Dictation. Work relations with other people at the place of work include relationships with fellow employees, workers, or colleagues. A major part of work or job satisfaction comes from getting on with others at work. Work relations will also include those between the boss and yourself. Management-employee relations are not always straightforward, particularly as the management's assessment of your performance can be crucial to your future career. there will always be matters about which employees will want to talk to the management. In small businesses, the boss will probably work alongside his workers. Anything which needs to be sorted out will be done face to face as soon as a problem arises. There may be no formal meetings or procedures. The larger the business, the less direct contact there will be between employees and management. Special meetings have to be held and procedures set up to say when, where, how, and in what circumstances the employees can talk to the management. Some companies have specially organized consultative committees for this purpose. In many countries of the world today, particularly in large firms, employees join a trade union and ask the union to represent them to the management. Through the union, all categories of employees can pass on the complaints they have and try to get things changed. The process through which unions negotiate with management on behalf of their members is called collective bargaining. Instead of each employee trying to bargain alone with the company, the employees join together and collectively put forward their views. Occasionally, a firm will refuse to recognize the right of a union to negotiate for its members, and a dispute over union recognition will arise. Where there is a disagreement, bargaining or negotiating will take place. A compromise agreement may be reached. Where this is not possible, the sides can go to arbitration and bring in a third party from outside to say what they think should happen. Part B. Listening Comprehension. Passage 1.
Part B. Listening Comprehension. Passage 1. We asked a number of people who work in offices to tell us what they thought about the introduction of new technology into office life, computer terminals, visual display units, and so on. First, Anita, a secretary.
You're being pushed into a different world, a keyboard world. It takes away the role of secretary. It makes your role very, very different. You find yourself thinking, what are these machines doing to me? At the end of the day, you feel, well, when you've switched off the machine, that you've unplugged yourself.
And now, Peter, an office administrator.
Well, all our bosses have terminals on their desks, but they don't use them. I'm not sure why. Perhaps it's just as well because the system's overloaded enough as it is. If too many try to use it, it just breaks down.
Next, we hear from Roberta, an office design consultant.
We interviewed more than 300 people from different organizations attempting to automate their offices. There were few, I mean, less than 5% success stories. Senior management tend to think that if they install a computer system in their offices and give the staff a couple of days training, amazing new levels of efficiency will be attained. Well, of course they're wrong. New technology means that jobs have to be rethought, redesigned, and unless they're redesigned properly, then things will get worse, not better.
On now to Andrew. He is a bank clerk.
My old job was ordering out bits of stationery, such as money bags, you know. I used to write the orders on special order forms by hand and specify the numbers of items required. But now I do this at the computer terminal. I have to keyboard in numbers for everything. Every individual item has a code and also a figure for the number of items I order. You can imagine the kinds of mistakes that you can make if you're on the terminal all day. You can order 4,000 packets of item 2 instead of 2 packets of item 4,000. And it's so boring, typing in numbers all day long.
Our next interviewee is Edward, who works as a personal assistant for a large international company.
Computerization is very much the unknown. We've got these computer experts and systems analysts who are setting up the computer and linking it to all our workstations. But a lot of the work they do, nobody knows about. I've no idea what they are doing a lot of it for. I don't know where it's all leading to.
And now we hear from a typist. This is Monica.
As for word processing, well, all the adverts say how much easier it makes your life and everything. But it has made my life much more difficult. When they're dictating, they can say anything they didn't like. It doesn't matter if they don't like it because they can just knock it out later. I'm the one who's left with twice as much work. If they've not said something urgent they need doing, and you've been on the machine for 3 hours, they don't say, well, can you do it? Or, do you want to rest? They say, do it.
And finally, we hear from William, a clerk with a well-known London shipping company.
It's an awful thought, but if BDUs carry on growing as quickly as they are, then office life as I knew it when I left school won't exist. Everyone will be a BDU operator.
1. Which of the following has a definitely positive view of the introduction of computers into office life?
2. What does Peter seem to think?
3. Who is Edward?
4. Who thinks that computers do not help much without organizing office work differently?
5. How many people are being interviewed according to the talk?
Passage 2.
Paris. A French state prosecutor has opened a preliminary inquiry into whether Prime Minister Alain Juppé can be prosecuted for leasing a flat owned by the city of Paris when he was deputy mayor. Judicial sources said on Thursday the Paris Taxpayers Association asked the prosecutor to investigate the lease on the elegant low-rent flat. French law bars elected mayors and assistant mayors of towns with more than 3,500 residents from leasing their homes from the local authority. The offense carries a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison and a fine of 500,000 francs.
Moscow. General Romanov, commander of Russia's joint forces in the rebel region of Chechnya, was badly injured yesterday by a bomb that killed and wounded several other Russian soldiers, Russian news agency said. Nationalities Minister Mikhailov, who is Moscow's top peace negotiator in Chechnya, said Romanov suffered an open skull brain injury. He said doctors regarded Romanov's conditions as very serious.
Colombo. Sri Lanka's Tamil Tiger rebels killed 8 soldiers yesterday when they attacked and foot patrolled in the eastern district, the military said. 4 soldiers were wounded in the clash at Palamima Dukanda, Defense Ministry Operational Headquarters said in a communique. Residents traveling from the northern rebel-held Jaffna Peninsula to the south yesterday said monsoon rains were making life difficult for families made homeless by the current armed forces offensive.
New York. An uncompromising Pope John Paul has plunged into a debate bitterly dividing Americans, calling legal abortion a moral blight on the country's tradition of tolerance and freedom. His comments at a rain-soaked outdoor mass attended by 83,000 people on Thursday continued a theme he has been hitting since arriving in the United States for a 5-day visit. He compared anti-abortion campaigns to past U.S. struggles against racial discrimination.
San Fernando, Philippines. The cost of damage caused by Tropical Storm Sibyl in the Philippines has surpassed 1 billion pesos and is still climbing, local officials said. Sibyl caused widespread havoc when it battered the Philippines over the weekend, killing more than 100 people. Hundreds of people are still being evacuated from San Fernando a city of 300,000 people north of Manila because of rising floodwaters in the area.
6. What would be the punishment if the Prime Minister was found guilty?
7. What is the second item of news about?
8. Which of the following statements is not true, according to the third item of news?
9. What has Pope John Paul criticized during his visit to the United States?
10. How many people were killed by the storm in the Philippines? Passage 3. Thanks, Lynn. Right. If you remember, last week we talked about using emulsion paint on walls and ceilings. Well, this week I'm going to tell you about how to use gloss paint on woodwork. That's doors, windows, skirting boards, cupboards, things like that. Now, remember what I told. What's the most important thing when painting?
Preparation, Cecil.
Right. The first thing you've got to do is to make sure that all the surfaces you're going to paint are clean. So use a cloth dipped in white spirit to remove any greasy finger marks. Then, wash the surface with a sponge and detergent and make sure to rinse it off with clean water and allow it to dry. The next thing is to repair any damaged parts. If the old paint is loose or flaking away, the new paint won't stick to it. So use a special scraping knife. That's the wider kind of knife you saw, to remove any loose bits of paint. After that, you'll have to rub over the surface with fine sandpaper to smooth it down. Make sure it's really smooth before you continue. If there are any cracks or holes, you'll need to fill them. Use some filler paste, like the sort Ling showed you, and apply it with a filling knife. That's the narrow one you saw. Try to get the surface as flat as possible, and then leave it till it's completely dry and hard. It's best to leave it overnight, in fact, before you smooth it down. Now, the next stage. The most important thing now is to make sure you read the instructions on the paint tin. No, don't laugh. You'd be surprised how many people don't bother to read the manufacturer's instructions. You need to know what undercoat to use, if any, for example. After that, it's important with most paints to stir them thoroughly to make sure they're well mixed and smooth, and so the color is consistent. Otherwise, you can get patches which are darker or lighter, not very desirable. When you're ready to start painting, tip some paint into the paint kettle, if you've got one, or the bowl or whatever, like so. It's best not to work from the paint tin itself. For one reason, the paint in the tin could start to thicken up if the tin is left open. And also, if you get any dirt on your brush, it could spoil the whole tin. Choose a suitable brush. It should be clean, obviously, but you'll probably find that an old brush is generally better than a brand new one. And then start. Use nice, easy strokes, like this. And make sure you spread the paint evenly over the surface. Does anyone want to have a go?
Yes, I don't mind having a go.
One more thing. Clean the brushes as soon as you finish, or you'll have to buy new ones after every job. An expensive business. Use white spirit to be sure to get rid of every trace of paint.
11. What's the teacher talking about?
12. According to the teacher, which of the following is the most important thing when you're painting?
13. Which of the following statements is not true according to the teacher?
14. Which of the following should be used to remove loose pieces of paint?
15. Why does the teacher advise against working from the paint tins?